And then there was a moment I clearly remember that we have a jar that's the shape of a snowman. And then you can open it and there are fortune cookies in it. And I was just looking at the jar and it's so cute. And I just felt like I want my baby.
That's Dr. Ying Diao of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She is in the Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering Department, and she is also affiliated with the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology at the University of Illinois. She is describing the moment she decided to have a child. Science while parenting is the main focus of today's podcast, and Ying Diao will talk about that. And we will get into a bit of her science and research too, of course. Hi, and welcome to Conversations with Scientists. I'm science journalist Vivian Marks. I wrote a story about science and parenting. A link to that is in the show transcript. And I just think it's fun to give you all a listen to some things people said as I reported this story. Stories usually have space constraints, and this gives interviewees a bit more time and space. Dr. Diao studies the molecular assembly process in order to develop sustainable materials and devices that can be used in environmental engineering, energy, and healthcare. She and her group have, for example, developed wearable electronics for plants. They record data and track things like growth. She collaborates with NASA and with a colleague at the University of Illinois in plant biology and crop science. We will get to that in a bit in this podcast. She works with different departments on campus, so I wondered if she had a home base.
That is the chemical and biomolecular engineering. That's my home department.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of pivot and you, yes.
Yeah, diffuse across the campus.
Here we go, diffuse, of course. Yeah, yes.
As an engineer, she, as she calls it, diffuses across departments on the campus. She has a stack of awards too, and I wondered if there was one award she was most proud of.
Probably is the MIT Technology Review 35 under 35.
35 under 35 is a list compiled by the magazine MIT Technology Review to present 35 innovators under 35 years of age. And the award was given because she developed a printing technique to make flexible solar cells, and you could print them on surfaces like windows. What's special about this, too, is the fact that she made it possible for polymers and not, as is typical, silicon to be solar materials. I also asked her how to pronounce her name. Regular listeners of this podcast know I always ask this in an attempt to kind of, sort of, try to get a name pronounced okay. Doesn't always work, but I try.
Ying Diao.
Ying Diao?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's good. Ying Diao.
The main reason I queried Dr. Diao was to learn about what it was like for her to do science while parenting.
My son is 4 years old, and my daughter is 9 months old.
I interviewed her a while ago, so her children are a little older now. I asked how she went about deciding when might be the right time to have a child, given her busy life as a scientist, her research, professorship, and her lab group.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we had our first child in my third year as assistant professor. So I think it was not a rational decision.
When is that kind of thing a rational decision? Like, okay, we're going to mark this down and we're going to do an Excel chart. And yes, but I do think that sometimes PhD students and even postdocs are like, no, I can't do this.
I loved that Ying Diao had such a sense of humor about this. I do hear in my interviews that PhD students and postdocs, as well as faculty, sometimes go back and forth on this decision. Their studies, their research are all consuming, so there seems to be too little time for children. In her case, Ying Diao did her bachelor's degree at Tsinghua University in China and her master's and PhD at MIT. Then she was a postdoc at Stanford University and SLAC, the Stanford Linear Accelerator, also called SLAC, National Accelerator Laboratory, and she decided to wait a bit to have children.
Yeah, so I think I intentionally did not try to have a kids in my PhD or postdoc because I was working my ass off and I couldn't think of how I would be able to work if I had run a kid. But I think I'm kind of fortunate that I had my first child in my third year because at that time, my lab is already running by itself. So I trained my first two batch of students. I made sure that they were trained well. And I also hired a postdoc who can mentor them. And so by the time I was ready for my first child, I think my lab can run without me for a couple of months. So, and another thing, as I said, it's not a rational decision. It's because that is an emotional decision that I just felt this urge. I want my first child. I'm ready for that. And I think there was a moment I clearly remember that we have a jar that's the shape of a snowman. And then you can open it and there are fortune cookies in it. And I was just looking at the jar and it's so cute. And I just felt like I want my baby.
Did you already own this jar or did you see it like in a store or online or?
Oh yeah, I own the jar, but then at that moment I looked at it differently. I felt like, oh, it looks so cute. And I really felt this motherly urge that I want my child.
Yes, of course. And I mean, it's also, I mean, it's something that obviously you can do whenever or not, but it's also something that has to be right for you, right? If you're not ready, then that's something that you have the freedom to decide about. But so when you decided and all the other sort of things kind of come together, then the question is, who do you tell? Do you not tell? Do you wait until somebody says, oh, it looks like you're eating a lot of cookies, you know? I mean, like...
yeah, that's a great question. So actually, I was very concerned, so I didn't tell any of my group members. I was worried that they will be worried that it'll take a lot of time from me and from mentorship. So I think I waited until maybe 7th or 8th month until it's really, really obvious. I told them the delivery date so that they can plan accordingly.
It's tomorrow and I'm not going to be in the office. But don't worry, I will call you at 1 to check in on the lab group meeting. Wow, that's great. Well, I think that's understandable, right? Also because they're looking to you as, you know, that magician that they can always turn to. So maybe their first thing is fear. But I would think that some of them are thinking, I want to be a scientist and a parent, right? Whether it's a man or a woman, doesn't matter. But they might be kind of figuring out, okay, how do I do this?
Yeah, exactly. So, but at the time, I wasn't able to think through this lens that I could be a role model in this. And but then it turned out my worry is not necessary at all, because my students actually did a baby shower for me, a surprise one.
And that's so sweet.
Very sweet. Yeah. It was very sweet. So it was a group meeting, and I went into the to the conference room, and then suddenly I saw all these gifts on the table, and also they drew these beautiful pictures on the whiteboard. And it was so lovely, and they gave this statistical thermodynamics for babies, and then organic chemistry for babies. They give me these books.
There is a statistical thermodynamics for babies book. Oh my God. But I should probably get that. It's probably like at my level. Wow. I see. So they actually really embraced this idea.
Yeah. They said, oh, our newest group member is going to be born.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, that's also makes you calmer, right? About, but then you still had to tell, the department chair and maybe other people and colleagues, or did you just say, you know, I'm not going to bother with that in any formal way. I'll just send an email or something.
Yeah, actually I didn't do anything because, I was worried as well, because in my department, a colleague, a very senior colleague later told me that it was after 120 years that the department has a faculty who gave birth to a child in that department.
Really?
I was wowed when Ying Diao said this. She was the first person to be a mother as a faculty member in 120 years. Of course, among her colleagues, others are parents.
They have kids, but then I think he was talking about literally giving birth. So basically, faculty members giving birth to kids.
So you're a trailblazer.
Being a trailblazer isn't always an easy position to be in, so I wondered about the reactions to her pregnancy that she experienced.
Yeah, some mixed reactions. So the colleagues who have kids, they're really nice. And one of my colleagues, he asked his wife to show us how she designed a baby room and what kind of stuff to buy and all that. That's really sweet. And then she keeps on checking in with me. But then there are colleagues who do not have kids. Their reaction is kind of different, right? So I think in a way, it felt like they had to arrange for others to step in to do the departmental service in my absence.
Scientists who become parents face all sorts of situations with their newborn, of course, but they also have to navigate how their colleagues will react. This is likely never easy, and logistical things have to be arranged, such as parental leave. In her case, both she and her partner took leave. She didn't teach during her leave, but she did tend to some departmental duties after she went on leave. For example, there were qualifying exams for PhD students that she supervised.
So both of us take, leaves, but then, so it was like no teaching, but then the service still on. So I remember, right, so after delivery, there was this departmental, under the qualifying exams I'm supposed to serve on, but then they had to scramble and find somebody else to do it. And those colleagues are not happy.
Many universities in the US and around the world offer parental leave, but the options vary, of course.
Yeah. It's routine that there is a teaching release for sure. So the delivery date, I think after a week of delivering, and I had to come in to give a talk to prospective students to recruit. It was brutal.
Oh my gosh. And it wasn't via Zoom, but it was actually in person. Oh.
Yeah, it was at the time, Zoom was not a thing, I think. Yeah, just for that, maybe 1 hour or something. I felt difficulty standing at the time.
Of course.
Pre-pandemic, if one can remember that phase, which somehow feels like forever ago, it was less common to have video chats. What has also changed is the way conferences are set up. Many, but certainly not all, let scientists bring their children along. But there tends to not be on-site childcare. But sometimes even dedicated lactation rooms are lacking. Here's Ying Diao.
Yeah, it varies significantly from meetings to meetings. So for the big meetings, usually now there's at least a lactation room, but they were some cases where, so the thing is, I went to American Physical Society meeting. Yeah, that's a big one. That doesn't have a lactation room. There's no privacy. So there are other parents there and taking their kids. And so there is no privacy. You cannot pump breast milk in that room.
That's hard. And they're changing diapers or what have you, or doing other things. And I see. So that's awkward.
Yeah, that one was the weird one. But the other ones are, there is indeed lactation room and I can request access to those. Right? And I think the best one is the Telluride, I think it's called Telluride Science Research Center meeting, TSRC. So that meeting is quite nice that they arrange for childcare as well.
In general, she does not take her children to scientific meetings.
Usually I don't tend to bring my kids to the meeting. Yeah. My husband, we take turn. We make sure we don't overlap when we travel.
I wondered, as Ying Diao was explaining how she handled her pregnancy and scientific meetings, I wondered how having children shapes the way she interacts with her lab members on the subject of parenting. With her graduate students, the subject of having children does not come up, but it does arise with postdoctoral fellows.
So it's very uncommon to have kids in grad school. And But recently, my postdoc had his third child, Rara. So, but then when he approached me for a salary raise, I was very understanding. I understand this, and we had a good negotiation. So,
children often can't sleep because they are teething or sick or restless, and that can mean a parent gets little to no sleep. So how does she handle that when she has to head to the lab that day? Maternity leave, at least in the U.S., is quite short.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. So I try to take naps whenever I need to. That's the nice thing about being in academia, that I have a lot of flexibility and I have my own office. So yeah, I can afford to take naps whenever I need to. when my first was born, I was constantly sick for maybe 1 or 2 years. So it was also the year I tried to give a lot of talks and go to a lot of conferences to prepare for my tenure. And so I remembered there was several times I almost completely lost my voice and I was still breastfeeding. So I couldn't take any medicine. And so I figured out all these natural remedies to help maintain my throat so that I can speak.
During and right after pregnancy, one has to scale back in the lab. I wondered how the pregnancies and having children has affected her science. As it turns out, it gave her some ideas.
For these two pregnancies, our publication definitely has gone down, right? The year after the delivery, right? So there's obvious dip. But then there was this positive moment that, so I was on maternity leave, and then I was able to read a lot of papers because there was no distraction whatsoever, no teaching, and no, I didn't have to do service. So I actually had time to read, right? And so I had some new ideas during those times. And even another example is that I had, so I work on printed electronics, basically wearable electronics that can put on human body. And so when I was pregnant, I had to do all these tests frequently to see the health status of my baby. And I realized how cumbersome these devices are. Yeah, all these big probes, and they're difficult to stay on. And then I have to lie there for like hours every week. And I thought, if we have these wearable pressure sensors and all that, that's commercially available, that's really helpful.
She got some ideas as she looked at the devices used to assess her pregnancy and, of course, experienced them firsthand. The ideas were about better ways to attach sensors to living things, her body and other living things. In her case, they started to think about working on sensors for babies and ended up developing sensors for plants.
But we did develop electronics for plants, not directly for babies, but then we pivoted towards plants to monitor their growth, wearable electronics for plants. So that is at an intersection of material science and manufacturing. Manufacturing is more like chemical engineering and plant biology. Yeah, basically we develop materials so that they can grow together with the plants. And we attach them to the plant leaf and to monitor how fast the plant is growing under different conditions. So we were able to track the plant growth with very fine details. So it's similar to if you were to measure your pulse. And so there are fine details of the pulse that can correlate with your health status. So same for plants, that the rhythm of the plant growth actually informs their health status. We actually work with a plant biologist called Andrew Leakey. So he's in plant biology department, the department head. We're about to start a collaboration where we extensively test the like sorghum or soybeans so that we can study the plant biology questions with these tools. So far we have been focusing on developing tools, but now we really are planning on carrying out experiments to answer plant biology questions.
Ying Diao traverses across these often quite separate fields of study, and she's a mother. We return to the subject of doing interdisciplinary science while parenting.
I think I'm really grateful for having my kids. Who, I mean, so after having kids, having rejections from about grants or papers felt much less painful because it really offers a sense of balance in my life that before they're here, I mean, I just felt my work is 100% is everything, and I really need to succeed. And once they are here, I think I'm much more happier. I wouldn't change a thing.
She wouldn't change a thing. That's important to know on this subject of science while parenting. And that was Conversations with Scientists. Today's guest was Dr. Ying Diao of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And I wanted to say thank you to Jenna Kurzweil at the University of Illinois' Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology, who helped me set up this chat with Ying Diao. The music in this podcast is Bubbles by Shi Mo, licensed from artlist.io. And I just wanted to add, because there's confusion about these things sometimes, the University of Illinois didn't pay for this podcast, and nobody paid to be in this podcast. This is independent journalism that I produce in my living room. I'm Vivian Marks. Thanks for listening.